This conference is being recorded.
Hello, this is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and this is our Performing Edge mentoring call on September the 29th. So welcome, everyone. I'm so glad that you're here today, and we'll be talking about a number of topics, especially athlete injury. Since I was just injured myself recently, maybe we can use that as a sort of a case study for a real-life case study here that we can all learn from. And so, I want to welcome. I see Duran's here. Welcome. And Sue Hasker. Welcome, Sue.
Hi.
And then Ricky is here, and some other people are joining, too. Yeah, Ricky, are you there from Brazil?
Yes, I'm here. Yes.
Yeah. Did you have a question, or did you want to give some feedback?
About your experience and how you are dealing with that, and probably they will some questions will come up.
Okay.
But I'm very curious and anxious and compassionate.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you're on the call. I'm glad all of you are on the call. Yeah. Great. And I think that's Lauren. Are you on the call? I see.
Yep. I'm here.
Oh, welcome. Yeah. Good to have you here. Yeah, so you, all of you probably read my email. Thank you for your support and all that. And so I thought, today would be a good day to just talk a little bit about the, what my experience, what happened in my bike accident. And then you could, I've formulated some a sort of initial plan myself, and I'm sure all of you have great ideas as well from our Performing Edge Coach training program. It's a really good way that you could put into practice what you've learned here. And imagine if I were your athlete client, what you would do to coach me, and all the different aspects of injury. I know Sue Hasker, that's one of your specialty areas, is healing, working at coaching, injury coaching, right? Yeah, and so, you probably got a lot of background in that, and I know TJ is a massage therapist, works in healing, and all of you doing coaching will have athletes, come across this sort of thing, will come across athletes who have been injured, or either through, sometimes it's a long-term overuse injury where, it just gets worse and worse over time, and then an athlete realizes they either have to stop and rest, or get some sort of treatment, or get surgery, and in those situations, you have a little bit more time to think about what your options are and plan ahead, choose your surgeon, or choose your, treatment, your healthcare practitioner, and choose your path and prepare, your whole place at home if you're going to be off your feet and all of that. I had none of that because sometimes you'll have athletes that, have been in an accident or, bike accidents happen all the time, and other kind of, ski accidents, soccer. I know Frank's working with soccer back in New York, and so there's all kinds of accidents that can happen, and you don't have the time to, to do that planning ahead. And so it's kind of like you're after it all happens, afterward, your mind goes through and kind of relives the whole thing over and over again. So let me just give you a little background. What happened was on Friday this last week, I was down in Santa Barbara for my high school reunion. And then afterward, we camped out. Actually, I broke a tooth at the high school reunion, biting on something. they say that accidents happen in threes, and I had my threes, that's for sure. And then I was camping out with some friends at El Capitan Beach, just north of Santa Barbara. It was beautiful, fantastic vacation. And then Thursday, the day before I was leaving, I was running and actually running around this great and beautiful trail, but tripped over some rocks and fell on my face. But that was just a minor kind of thing, a few bruises, no big deal. Just got up and kept running again like most athletes would. So that was number two of the threes. I guess I should have thought, I guess maybe I should be a little cautious here because the next one's coming. Because it was interesting, on Tuesday, earlier that week, I was going to go out for a bike ride, And I had, got all my gear on, got the helmet, got my bike gloves, got everything ready. And the last thing I did was pump up my tires. And right as I'm just, getting ready to pump up my front tire, the stem breaks on my front tire so that it just went flat and I couldn't ride. Maybe that was a sign. Now looking back, I'm thinking maybe my bike was trying to tell me something. But you really never know. So I had to wait a few days to get my bike fixed or just to get into town and get another stem or for the tire and all that and get that fixed and then go on the bike ride. So Friday, what happened was I went out on this road, and it goes back in the hills at Refugio Road. It's a beautiful road, but it's out in the middle of nowhere, and there's not that many cars at all. And I was riding along toward the mountains there. And then there's a dip in the road, and there's a creek that goes across the road a creek, and it gets a little bit high this time of year, and so there's a little bit of water that goes across the road there. And I was coming up to it, and I thought, should I cross this or not? In March, I went down there, and there was that same water, went across the road, and it was fine. I just went right through the water, no problem, just a little, inch or two of water, and not a big deal. So I thought, well, it was safe in March. I should be okay. So I go ahead and just ride across the water, but this was totally different. It just, boom, it just slammed me down on my left hip. It was really slimy. It was... there was a lot of moss, I guess, going across the road too, so it was super slick. And there's a grade there, a steel gradient, or grade that I might have landed on as well. So it just went down really fast, right onto my left hip. And I also, braced myself with my arms, so I think I bruised some ribs as well. So I thought I was okay. I was in tremendous pain, but. I was just lying there, and I could have literally been lying there for hours because there's hardly any cars that go out there. I'm out in the middle of nowhere, but amazingly, right as I fell, this car was right there. This nice couple saw me, and they stopped and rescued me. And thank goodness they said, "Wow, do you want us to call the paramedics?" And I said, "No, I think I'm okay. Why don't you just take me back to the campground if you can?" And I thought I maybe just had a major bruise or something, so they took me back to the campground. And, like most athletes, and you'll probably find this is true with your client athletes, that most athletes resist going to the hospital, at all costs, and try to, you want to try to deal with things in a least invasive way first. And I just thought, maybe I could just have somebody check it out in town or something. And I sat down back at the campground there. But then they called the campground, called the paramedics. They came over anyway and checked me out. And they're trying to convince me to go to the hospital. And I'm resisting, or just saying, well, I think I'm okay. Why don't I just go to, a local physician here, a chiropractor or something, and have it checked out first. And they said, well, you're gonna have to sign these release forms, including you could have death and coma, and going through all their checklist of scary kinds of possibilities. And they said, why don't you try to walk? Let's just get you up and see if you can walk first, and see how you're doing, because I was feeling a little better sitting down. But then they tried to get me up to walk, and I almost passed out in pain. I was clearly, there was something wrong. When I tried to put any weight on the left leg, it was so excruciating pain. So I knew there was something wrong. So I said, okay, I'll go to the hospital. So I was, next thing you know, one minute I'm in, riding out on my bike on a, just beautiful day. And the next minute I'm in the ambulance going to the hospital. And they got me there. They got to the hospital, and fortunately, there wasn't. I think could get me right into a room there, and then they take this big X-ray. Instead of going to get X-rays, they actually bring this machine that comes right over you. I'd never experienced that before, but when you're in a critical situation like that where you can't move, they bring the X-ray machine to you, and they put these plates underneath my hip, which is very painful. And they took X-rays and then went to look at them, and then they came back. And this one just general doctor came back to give me the news. He said, "Yeah, you fractured your hip," you're going to need surgery. I know, I understand you're from out of town, but, you know, you really, really can't transport you anywhere. You know, you really need to do it here. And then he leaves. That's all he said. You know, not much compassion, not much. He says, the orthopedic surgeon will be in to tell you more. And so he was like the guy to break the news, I guess, to me. So he went out, and then the orthopedic surgeon came in a little bit later. Luckily, fortunately, he was very, it sounded like he was really good. You don't want one that's going to be too old. You don't want the one that's too young. You want him to be just right. This guy, Dr. Dunbar, seemed like he was really knew what he was talking about. And I, right away, I told him who I was, and I think that's important for you, as athletes. And, you know, if you're ever in a situation like this, to let them know you're not just an average person. I said, hey, he introduced himself, and I said, I'm Joanne Dahlketter. You know, I won the San Francisco Marathon. I was second in the Ironman, and I really hope you can help me so I can run and bike again. I mean, I'm a really serious athlete. And I wanted him to know that I'm not just your average, 80-year-old person who breaks their hip, which they get a lot of, but that I have much higher expectations. So I think that was important to set that, you know, and to try to build a relationship with him, let him know who I am. So I'm not just another person in the factory line of surgeries here. So they then very quickly wheeled me upstairs. I didn't really have much of a choice. He drew out the... And this will happen with your athletes too, and yourself. You may have a choice of what's going on with the surgery. And he said he drew a picture of what's going on, and he said you have a fracture in your hip. It looks like it's a good pattern, a pattern that's easy to fix, but we're not sure. And if it's in your femur, which is just that large bone that goes down the leg, the left leg, the thigh, then we can put just three screws in there to help support it while it's healing, and it'll be 6 weeks, no weight bearing, on crutches only, absolutely no weight on that left foot. He says if it's worse than that, if there's a fracture in the, you know, in the pelvic bone, you know, be, you know, a lot more surgery and a lot more complicated, and that sounded really bad. And he says, I need your permission to sign off on it. I need to have both options available when we go in. We don't know till we go in for the surgery to see what's going on. So I had to sign off on these things. I was so scared at that time. I had friends there, luckily, to help me, to hold my hand, and I was really scared. What I did was I remembered the one time I was in surgery with a bunion surgery with several years ago, a friend of mine, Lori Binder. She was my training partner. She also was my surgery nurse, and she held my hand, and right before the surgery, she said to me, you know, Joanne, everything is going to turn out just fine. Everything is going to turn out just fine. And I remember her saying that right before they put me under the anesthesia. And so even though no one was saying that to me, I was able to say that to myself, that everything is going to turn out just fine, and try to reassure myself. So I did that, and even though I was scared to death and not sure what was going to happen to me, if I'd ever be able to run or walk again, I was just happy to be alive. So they wheeled me up to the surgery room then, and explained a few more things, and then I was out. The anesthesiologist put me out. They did the surgery. Next thing you know, the surgeon is explaining that luckily we went with plan A. It was just the femur, so we did the much less invasive surgery and put just three screws in your femur. But it's still very delicate, and it's something, you know, if you put any weight on that, it could totally screw up the surgery. So you got to respect this and be off for 6 weeks and absolutely no weight bearing. And follow instructions. And so then they took me to the room, the recovery room, for overnight to get so I could get they could get the pain under control. And there were no rooms available for normally I'd go into a med-surg recovery room, but there were no rooms left, so they had to put me in the ICU, which cost 10 times more. But they said they won't charge for that, and so that'll be something to deal with insurance and find out if I get, hopefully, You know, that's another stressor, is always wondering what you'll be charged for things. But because I was in the ICU, they monitor everything all night long, and they have, like, the heart rate monitor set for, like, 60 beats. If it goes below 60, it sets off this alarm. They have it set for the average person. Well, my heart rate is up there saying 37 because I'm in good shape, and so the alarm is going off all night long, every 2 minutes of this alarm, so I get absolutely no sleep. But did get very good treatment, and so in the morning got up and felt good. Didn't have much pain, amazingly. I was on pain medication, of course, and got a friend to drive my car back here. And so I got back home. But I live in a condo and work out of my home office here. Upstairs, there's like 12 or 14 stairs, concrete stairs, and there's no elevator. So that was my first challenge. They said they wouldn't let me out of the hospital until I could demonstrate to them that I could crutch up and down the stairs. So you have to actually pass tests before they let you leave. So I did that because I've had experience before with crutching. I was able to do that. So I left the... So I was okay. I passed crutching test, and they released me, got back here, and I was able to get up the stairs. Okay, I had friends, got some groceries, and had friends and neighbors help me carry the groceries up the stairs. And now here I am talking with all of you, doing my regular, because I'm a performing edge coach and able to do calls and do my work out of my home, just like you can with this. I'm able to carry on, even though things are really tough and totally, it takes 10, 20 times longer to do everything. As far as walking around, getting around, I'm able to do my work by phone and on the computer still just fine. So that's my story that happened to me. And I sent you a number of questions. I thought that, for a few minutes we could talk about how any feedback that you have, your thoughts about that, questions about, any additional questions you might have. If I was a client, athlete client you're coaching through, what more information would you want from me? And what techniques would you use to help me, get through the injury physically? And then also what strategies to get through mentally for the surgery. And then I listed a number of areas there that, techniques to that with, when you're dealing with any athlete that's had a accident, a sports injury accident, you'd want to deal with those issues that I put in the email there. Things like how to promote healing and how to keep a person's spirits up emotionally and how to not being able to do any of the normal activities. The PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder, symptoms. I tend to, when I go to bed at night, I think about the accident, slipping in that water again, how fast it happened. And then I think about regrets. Why didn't I just turn around and say, it's stupid. Why didn't I just say, hey, I'm not going through the water, or just walk my bike across the water? I could have easily done that, that split-second decision. Feeling incapacitated, handling the pain from the surgery, learning to switch gears, finding a new rhythm, learning to slow down and pace myself, different coping mechanisms just for all the day-to-day activities, like cooking, dressing. When you can't carry, I can't carry anything while I'm crutching, of course, so I have to get stuff in a day pack or whatever to carry things around. Another couple things that I forgot to put on there were weight. Every athlete is concerned about weight, how to not gain weight while you're injured. And then the other thing is how to not have, how to take care of the rest of your body so that there's no compensation injuries, which I've got chest, I've got pain in my ribs from all the crutching and that sort of thing, upper ribs because they're not quite, also because I think they were injured a bit during the accident when I braced myself for the fall. And then the last thing is just, how to trust my body, that my body knows what to do to heal itself once we provide the right environment for it. And then any other issues that you might have. So, let me just open it up here to what kinds of thoughts all of you might have about that. Anyone can jump in if you'd like. Yeah, Jerome, I can hardly hear you. Can you... speak up or turn your volume up? Duran? Huh, maybe he's on a cell phone. I can't quite hear. Huh. Well, maybe we can come back to you in a second. Susan, Sue, I know your area is sports is injury and injury coaching. What are your thoughts?
Well, I've had the personal experience that you've had, and all of these areas are really important. And it's important for people to realize that their doctor isn't going to be the one to help them with these questions.
That's
They're,
right.
They don't have time. They're geared for fixing problems. They're like mechanics, you know, they want to get the machine running again. And they don't have time to notice if maybe you're not coping very well.
Yeah.
And so if you start to notice that you're getting depressed or you're getting more and more worried about not getting better, then I think that you either need a coach or in some cases a therapist if it gets too bad, like with the PTSD. But just having a reality check that these are normal things for people to go through when they're recovering makes the difference, because they feel isolated because the doctor's not talking about it.
Yeah.
So.
That's true. That's really good advice, yeah. And I have I'm starting to reach out to letting friends know about it. And so it's so wonderful when people call. I think one of the great things is if you can surround yourself with positive people, yeah, other friends who either have been through just general athlete friends for me, or long-term friends, family members, and also people who've been through this specific kind of injury or a similar kind of crash situation, accident is really a good thing. Yeah. But that's true. I think the doctor is really good at what they do, and they're they just want to get in there and do the surgery, and that's and then move on kind of thing. And if you can at all make friends with your doctor, your orthopedic surgeon, that is great. Well, one thing, this Dr. Dunbar in Santa Barbara, he actually. I didn't ask for it, but he actually put on the on my dismissal papers discharge papers there. He put his cell phone number, and she said, the nurse said, yeah, the doctor said you can call him anytime with any questions on his cell phone. I thought, wow, that's great. So I did call him the next day and ask him, can you just walk me through the surgery? I'm a sports psychologist and top athlete, and it would really help me to understand exactly what you did in the surgery. And then what needs to happen for it to heal. And so he took the time to, you know, we had about a half hour conversation he actually walked me through all the details of every step of what he did during the surgery, from the time they made me comfortable, opened me up, and put these guide, you know, did lots of different kinds of x-rays to find the exact spot where the injury is, and put these guide wires there so that helps them guide the screws in, and then they determine where they need to go and what kind of surgery they need to do. And he just walked me through the whole thing, process, and it really helped me to know that he was very competent and very meticulous, and it wasn't just haphazard. It was really a good job, you know, that he did with the surgery. So that's a good suggestion for people. If you can get the doctor's, your surgeon's phone number or email, and have them kind of walk you through that, beforehand or afterward the surgery, then that can help you, you know, feel more confident that you were being fixed correctly, that all the right work's being done. So, yeah.
Now, that's important, because a lot of doctors assume you don't want to know, because there's a lot of people who don't want to know. So if you tell them, I want to know what you're doing and why, then they'll tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, because that helps with all of our work with visualization. Then, you know, you can, then I can visualize, okay, there's these screws in there, and they're helping to hold the bone together while it's healing. And then I ask him what needs to happen for it to heal. And first he said, of course, it heals when you don't put weight on it. So you got to not don't walk on it at all, and just let it rest and heal. And also, then the bone, the body knows how to, the body will build a bridge of bone around, first around the area where the screws, where the incision was, where the screws are, and then all throughout the that area, it'll build a bridge, so it'll be a strong bone again. So I can visualize that happening, all the little pieces, you know, the bone knitting itself back together again, building a bridge there. And that's a really good image to have. And so if you're working with someone, an athlete that has, you know, a bone injury or surgery, then you can have them visualize that the bone putting itself back together. It's just a miraculous thing that the body knows how to do this. But we have to provide the right environment for the body to do it, which is, yeah, to not... to follow your doctor's instructions and not walk on the, and not aggravate that certain area, right? So, yeah, that's good. That's really helpful. I know with you, Sue, you had the ankle surgery, and Dr. Cohen, did he do any extra kinds of things, help you through understanding the surgery and give you exercises to do?
He didn't give me exercises, but he sent me to a physical therapist, which was awesome. I wouldn't be walking as well as I am if I didn't go to the physical therapist and do what they told me to do. So I appreciated that. You know, I did build a friendship with Dr. Cohen, so it's easy for me to talk to him. And he's the one who referred me to you.
Yeah, that was so great.
Yeah. The one thing that I think is important, and I've done a lot of research, is the immune system reacts to your emotional state as well. So if you're full of anxiety or worry about what's going on, your immune system doesn't work as well. And a lot of times bottling up your emotions contributes to that. So it's there's research that shows that if you talk about what happens to you, it kind of releases the emotion so that your body can do the healing.
Mm-hmm.
So having a coach to at least listen to the whole story and all the parts of it, all the, you know, all the details where your family's probably tired of hearing the story over and over again.
Yeah.
When they interrupt you and they want to tell you what to do about it, a coach can just listen from start to finish the whole story and all the emotions around it.
Exactly.
And that kind of releases the energy.
Yeah. Without judgment. Yeah. Just the, yeah.
Joanna, I have a question.
Oh, sure. Oh, is that Ricky?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Ricky, yeah, from all the way from Brazil. It's so good to hear your voice. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Let's assume that you were working with a sports coach, and you would be having a session like tomorrow. What would you ask him to do? What would you expect him to do? What is like your major pain that you would expect him to work with?
Okay, so if I was working with a coach, performing edge coach, or yeah, someone, what would I ask him to do? That's a good question. Yeah, if you could go ahead and mute, thank you. That's a great question, Ricky. So I think I would ask them, well, first, just like Sue was saying, to listen to my story so they get the whole picture. And then I would, I'd tell them any specific symptoms I'm having that I need help with. So, for instance, right now I don't feel any pain in my hip because that's healing well, but I'm doing... I'm feeling pain in my upper left chest as a compensation kind of thing. And that'll happen a lot with athletes. I'm feeling just as I'm breathing right now, I'm feeling this kind of pain in my upper chest here. I think it's, either ribs or from the crutching. And so I need to figure out how I can get around with my daily activities and still not, you know, aggravate other areas of my body and not have that get me down as far as feeling like, oh, geez, you know, it's one thing and then another. So, Yeah, that's one thing I would ask them to do is to help with that part. And also I would want them to, you know, just kind of do a full assessment, ask me lots of questions about where I'm at right now emotionally and how I'm coping with this. And most people are telling me that it's, I'm doing remarkably well. You know, they thought I'd be drugged out on medication. And I'm not taking much. I just take one pain pill at night to sleep. But I don't seem to need it during the day. So I'm okay with that part. Because I also want to be aware of myself so I don't hurt myself. I'd rather not take too much pain medication. But I would want, and with a coach, I'd want them to, you know, do a visualization, I guess, so that a comforting, healing visualization that's, kind of going through the whole body and specifically the left femur, that left bone that was operated on to do, visualize healing there and, have a custom one just for that part that was operated on. And then also, like, my chest here that's in pain as well. The ribs might have been injured a little bit, so I need to, have a visualization to handle that, how to be gentle with my ribs, there are things that you can do that, finding out what I can do and what I can't do as far as moving around. So, I've sort of in a good network of coaches myself and healers and, I know chiropractors and orthopedic surgeons, and I'm asking, rather than just having one, I'm having a number of people sort of just asking for advice from lots of people about different things, and I think that really helps so that I can get, lots of different opinions about what to do and what not to do. I think it's not just the mental part that needs, as a coach, that I would want to address, but both the mental and the physical part. I think both together, so that, for instance, one person who works in with posture was advising. He looks at things in terms of, the structure of the body and the way you hold your body and how to prevent pain there. And he knows that you got to keep that hip flexible. And so even though the femur was operated on, which is just below there, I can still move my hips and comfortably back and forth. So I could do like pelvic tilts and, arch my back and then bend my back. In fact, I'm doing that right now as I'm talking with you. So I'm not in as much pain. And, going back and forth slowly so I can, get that flexibility. And so because the hip, all that hip area needs, it's sort of unbalanced right now with working on the right-hand side, but as an athlete, of course, we want to know, what kinds of things can we do for a little while. Another thing I'd want is from a coach is to help me build, sort of structure a logbook. I think that would be really good, and other people have suggested that. How would you think about how you would structure a kind of a healing logbook? I have logbooks that I've structured for athletes for, putting in their mileage and their, working out their primary sport and their cross training and their recovery and all that, where it's, the mental part is just kind of one aspect. But in this, I think there could be a whole extra, like a healing recovery logbook that I'm sort of, I'm doing right, putting that together right now. And as a coach, I'll provide that for you too, let you know how I'm, what aspects I'm putting in there. And you could do a general one if you were working on this, have a general one for, healing athletes in general. And then you could also have custom ones, find a way for your athletes to customize it. So for me, I'd want to put down all the things that I need to do, all the different exercises and so that I can see the progress each day. So as, Ricky, if I were working with you as a coach, I'd want to see, how can I see that I'm making a little bit of progress? And also knowing that recovery is not always doesn't always go in a straight line. Sometimes it's a couple steps forward and one step back. So we need to, take that into account. But I know that the doctor said, for instance, in 3 weeks after the surgery, I'll be able to swim. So it's been like 5 days, 6 days now. So it's kind of like thinking, okay, it's like 2 more weeks till I get out of jail. I know that I'll feel so much better when I'm swimming. So I'm already visualizing, you know, swimming and how great that will feel, and counting down the days till I can actually get in a pool. And do a little bit at a time, of course, but looking at that. And then there's simple, each day I'm discovering new small exercises I can do. So, you want to put those, if you were a coach, if I was working with you, I'd want you to help me to discover what exercises can I do, because we're always looking at what you can't do. You know, I can't swim right now. I can't get the wound wet. I can't bike. I can't run. I can't walk. And that can get really depressing. But if you ask yourself the other question, what can I do, then that opens up a lot more possibilities. So, for instance, you know, with athletes, like with working with me, rather than going out for a one-hour run or hour-and-a-half run, you know, one long dedicated exercise period, which I can't do right now, instead I do like little every hour do a little short mini exercise period. So I could think of it as like 12 exercise periods a day, where I go out to the living room and I do my little hip raises or the things, exercises that they showed me at the hospital that I could do, pointing my toe and bringing my putting a pillow under my knee, under the back part of my leg, and then pushing down. And actually, that feels really good. And one chiropractor told me that you can do, if you can't work on one side, the left side I have to be really delicate with, but I can still work the right side of my body. And even if you're working the right side, you're getting the benefit on the left side about half as much. You're still getting the it's like you're working the left side 50% as much, because you're doing a little bit on the left side too, and so you're getting blood flow to that area, and that's really important. So, so that's good. Did you have a...
Dr. Joanne?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just...
Is this Lauren?
There was a few things that you said that kind of stuck out to me.
Yeah, good. I wanted to ask you, Lauren, yeah.
In your email, you said something along the lines of, you know, an athlete who's used to being busy and then their lifestyle kind of changes because they can't move and, you know, they need something to fill that time. And the biggest thing for me was education. And I know that, like, Sue and a couple other people mentioned, like, the physical part. And so I was, you know, in the back of my head when everyone was talking about it, you know, that time that you as the therapist or you as the coach get to spend with them, processing the emotional part and then providing either resources or some sort of reading material for them to educate themselves about the physical part, because that can help them be aware of it, which can lessen the anxiety and stuff of, you know, oh my gosh, this isolation feeling. Like the education about the physical part can lessen that anxiety, and then also it can kind of fill their time a little bit when they're used to working out or they're used to doing other things.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I think that's excellent, Lauren. And you could, provide them some resources now because everything's online. It's so much easier. You don't have to go to a library somewhere, and you could just search. There's a great resource, PubMed. If you go to, I think it's just PubMed.com, PubMed.com, they list a whole, or just search on that. And then you can, it takes you to all the NIH, National Institute of Health, government site there and you can research, put in any topic that you want, and you put in hip fracture, whatever the particular injury that an athlete might have, and then just give them links to those studies, and it gives the abstract, so you don't have to, they don't have to read the whole thing if they're not, scientifically oriented. So that's a good idea. Yeah, I think, Lauren, that's great. Yeah, and I think education is really important. It really empowers you, like you say, to. Be aware, you know, you want to be a student of your injury. Like when I you know, I had to have eye surgery 5 years ago, and I had actually had cataracts, and I was going blind. And I don't know if I've told this story, just well, maybe to one person, to Sue. I might have told it to you, but it's just I was actually, you know, I was falling all the time when I was running, and it was mainly because I couldn't see the rocks and the roots and the trail. It turns out I had cataracts at a really early age, which is kind of unusual. But fortunately, there was this crystal lens, a new lens that's being that was developed so that you can see just like when you're a kid again. It's flexible. You can see far and near, and you don't need glasses. And but I was so scared for that because of that surgery coming up, because it's so different than, you know, with a hip injury just like I had. They knock you out, and you're not doing any. You don't have to do anything. But eye surgery, I asked my doctor, well, what tools do you have to help me prepare for? I said, well, do you knock me out? You know, will I be under anesthesia? They said, no, we have to have you awake to be able to follow instructions. You know, you didn't have the best bedside manner. I said, what? I have to be awake while you're opening up my eye? And so I said, well, what tools do you have to help me prepare for the surgery? And they said, oh, nothing, just come on in for the surgery. Take your eye drops and medication beforehand. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. Nothing to prepare me. So I, of course, because I'm, you know, visualization and mental training is my area of expertise, I created my own preparation program for preparing for eye surgery. And I created my own CDs, my own audios, and I listen to them every night. And because it's a totally foreign concept, how do you keep your eye open while somebody's working on your eye? You've been told your whole life by your parents, don't let anything in your eye. And how do you relax and all of that ahead of time? Because, and you absolutely can't move. Of course, they do a lot in the surgery room to stabilize you, but you really, it's basically down to you being relaxed and prepared. So I did a total preparation program for that. And afterward, it was just amazing. They said I was the best patient they'd ever had. And I came out of there just even 2 hours after the surgery, I could see, I could read the street signs, a couple days later, I was able to go out for a run and see, you know, I could see the rocks and the roots and the trail, could see everything. And then your close vision comes a few days later. I went in and they measured my distance was normal vision is 20/20. And my vision was 20/15, which is even better than normal. It's like, you know, it's like super good vision that you know, it's like a kid, seeing like a kid, but even better than you could ever see, you know, with normal eyes. So it was just phenomenal. And then when I also, so that was distance vision. And then when I could see up close, I could see actual, I could read 4-point print with no glasses. And this is only a few days after the surgery. And I think, you know, it's a combination of, you know, a good surgeon, a great technology, this crystal lens, and also me being prepared as a patient for that surgery and becoming a student. Lauren, like you say, I did lots of research, and I found out, I asked every possible question there was of my surgeon, and the staff there were very helpful, and I just asked them everything. And how I could be prepared. I talked to other people, and I really delved into it to find out, okay, how can I be the best possible patient I can be here? Because with eye surgery and most surgeries, you only have one shot at it. And so it's, you know, I prepared for that surgery like I prepare for a race, you know, total mental focus on what I needed to do. Laser vision, laser focus on my laser surgery, even though it was actual cataract surgery. You know, it changed my life. And so that's a kind of a success story from a past surgery where, yeah, I was able to provide, have a lot of that education and be a really good student of the surgery. And in this case, I didn't, of course, have time to prepare for the surgery afterward, but I was able to, you know, now that I'm finished, now that it was a successful surgery, now I need to have a successful recovery and do everything I can afterward, as you say, like Lauren, to read about it, to, you know, just go online and look up hip fracture and talk with all of my healing, you know, colleagues that I know to get as much advice as I can. And just be really, it's a really important time to focus on it. And I'll probably end up, you know, making a product out of it, just like I did with eye surgery. I created a program called Prepare for Eye Surgery. I sold it to the doctors who and ended up paying for the my surgery cost $10,000. And they wrote me a check for much more than that, actually, for the eye surgery program that I created for them. So I ended up paying for my surgery, which was really nice. So, you know, anything that we go through, like Sue with your ankle injury, you're a much better person to, you know, to coach people who've been through that and other kinds of surgeries because you've been through it yourself. And so these are really important times for you can coach your athletes to, this is the most important time in your life. You'll probably learn some of the most important lessons of your life to come out of this a much better person, and you'll become a much better coach. So does that kind of make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Lauren,
yeah. Definitely, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your comments. Oh, is that door on? Are you back?
Yeah.
Hey, good to hear your voice. What?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, speak as loud as you can. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I can totally relate to your injury. You know, I used to bike. I've been hit 4 times on a bike. So, that can be a painful process.
You used to bike what? You used to say that again? You used to bike what?
I used to road bike.
Oh, yeah.
A lot. And I've been hit off of the road 4 times.
Oh, hit off the road. You mean by cars?
Yeah. Cars, by trucks.
Oh, my gosh.
Luckily, I was able to, you know, catch myself and not get a major injury. But I actually had a friend who had suffered a compound fracture in his forearm.
Wow.
His bone literally came out of his arm.
Oh.
And that was a wild experience. And
were you there?
Before his arm 100% now.
Wow.
But he was a runner, too, and he was training for a triathlon with us. But can really relate. And, I just wanted to share a personal experience I've been going through. I've had plantar fasciitis.
Oh, yeah.
Foot, and that can be one of the most annoying.
Yeah, I've had.
As an athlete.
I've had that. Oh.
Yeah. And what I did is, number one, I'm also a personal trainer, but number one, I took that time to find different ways to cross train.
Mm-hmm.
From using arm ergometers to biking to using elliptical to swimming, different things that I can do that didn't put that pressure on my foot. Another thing I did is I used like a percentage scale. So every day I would say, okay, I'm going to go at this. I'm going to go 60% today. And I knew I can do a little bit more, but my goal that day was to do 60%. Then the next day I would come in or 2 days later, okay, you shoot up to 70. Oh, that's a little bit too much. Then we back down to 65. And now today I'm up to 95%. So after this call, I'm going to go do some sprint intervals. But, it feels good when you get it back. And I use all different resources from a Nuka doctor, chiropractor, to, physical therapist to doing vibration plates, which would be awesome. For you.
Just vibration?
On a vibration plate.
I don't know what that is.
It's a plate. It's like a big plate that you stand on, and you put the power on, and the plate underneath vibrates, and you don't move.
Huh.
So it creates all this vibration throughout your muscles, your bones, your joints, and it's a really great, really awesome thing for rehab.
Oh, yeah. Maybe I might have... I might have seen that in Texas once when I was at a really high-tech health club there. I'm not sure. Is that where they are at health clubs?
Yeah, in health clubs or, I'm fortunate because the place I work at has one. So I would just stand on there and was barefoot and, vibrate my foot, and it helps out a lot.
What does it do? It just creates circulation or?
Yes, circulation throughout your whole body. It it helps with, like if you were going to take a broomstick, you know, pretend you're standing up.
Uh-huh.
Visualize you're standing up and you take a broomstick and you shake it back and forth without moving your legs. You're just moving your arms.
Mm-hmm.
So it does that throughout your whole body. It just creates this vibration throughout your whole body. And it really helps, like, work your muscles without moving them. So instead of having to, like, do external, internal rotation with your hips, it'll kind of do that for you in a smaller scale. And then as you go, you increase intensity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually. Oh, yeah. Actually, I'm remembering now. Yeah, when I spoke at a health club in Texas, I was able to try one out there a year and a half ago. I'll have to try to see if I could find a place because I guess they're super expensive probably to purchase. It's not the sort of thing you purchase yourself. You probably go to a facility that has it.
Yeah, a facility that has it. The best way is that. But, yeah, I just wanted to share that with you and some of the things that I did for an injury. And I've also had both my knees scoped, and I remember the whole process of going through anesthesia and medication. And, I mean, right after my surgery, they're like, okay, walk. So
they said what?
They didn't even put me in a wheelchair. They told me to just get up and walk.
You're kidding. 19
years old.
You're 19?
I was 19, and I mean, they just scoped my knees. I had some cartilage damage and tear. And they go, okay, you're good. You can walk. And then I was out on the football field 2 weeks later. I was healed quick, I guess, because I was young. But
yeah.
Pretty amazing. But yeah, I mean, the more, you know, like everything you're saying, education, and the more things you can do to cross train would actually help you be a stronger runner and a biker when you get back out there. So
yeah, there's actually a...
I have a lady now that I'm working with, and she told me she has major hip problems.
Uh-huh.
And I go, okay, let me test your strength in your hips. I literally put my hand, doing like a kickback, I put my hand on her foot. I said, kick back for me. She couldn't move her foot.
Huh.
She had absolutely no strength in her glutes. And I said, that's why you have hip pain. And I've been working with her for a month. Her hip pain's gone.
Hmm.
Because I've strengthened her muscles all around it. And now she has so much more power. She's literally almost like pushing me. I have to kind of ground myself a little bit more now. But it's a great thing to see. And I think with people, we don't do enough of cross training as runners or certain type of athletes. You just stick to one thing, and then you neglect the other aspects that you need to work on. So,
yeah,
my recommendation is cross training.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. There's one. You were talking about an arm how do you say it? Ergometer. I think you mentioned that, something with your arms. Are you there, Duran?
Yeah.
Maybe we lost him. Yeah, or I was wondering if you meant, like where you're pedaling with your arms?
Yeah, that's a, armogometer, and that'll work your hip too.
Yeah, so I don't have one at home. I guess they have them at gyms, right? But I have...
Or you could just take, like, a broomstick or your own hands while you... rest in bed and just move your arms forward and backwards.
Yeah, that's good.
You don't actually have to have the machine right now.
That's a good idea, yeah. I'll try that first. And then there's something I came up with when I had my bunion surgery. This is a good suggestion for you with athletes in general who can't, who have knee or lower body injuries, is you can take a bicycle, you take your bike at home and then put it on a trainer, to make it a stationary bike. The ones you can buy them at any store. I've got an older one where you just take put the back wheel, it's on a roller, and then the front wheel, the front frame goes into a stand, so it holds. You take off the front wheel and you just put the front forks into a stand that holds it there, so that you normally just ride on it, of course, like a stationary bike, but you can use it a different way. If you tilt it, then tilt it back on its end so that the handlebars are pointing toward the ceiling, then you can sit behind it and straddle, you know, sit on the floor, straddle your legs behind it, put your legs out to the sides, and then all of a sudden you've got, you can pedal with your hands. So you create your own kind of arm ergometer with the bicycle, doing that because I can't, it's hard to get out of the house to go to a gym for another week or so. Often after somebody's been in surgery for a little while, it's more trouble to get out and go somewhere than it is to just, try to work around the house. And it's, you know, it takes a few days sometimes to get used to the crutching and all of that too. So, so there's that, and, it's amazing how you kind of create little things, as you're doing things around. Another suggestion is, doing things around the house, like I drop something, right? Normally you drop something, it's no big deal. You just pick it up. Right? But now you drop something, it's a major thing. Oh, jeez, how am I going to pick that up? And it's a big hassle, right? And so but I live alone, so I can't ask someone to help me. So I've got to figure out, okay, how am I going to lean over? And then I realized, I've got my right leg, so I just keep my right leg straight. I balance myself on the against the counter or something, and then I keep my back leg off the ground, and I just lean over and pick it up. And then I realized, this could be an exercise. While I'm picking this up, I pick it up. If I did this 10 times, just go down, touch the ground, and come back up, all of a sudden I turned that little incident of, a daily activity, something I needed to do, into something where I could actually exercise myself. And it actually felt really good to move my hip in that way. So I just, if you can be creative and discover different little exercises like that, then it's, it uses your brain, first of all, so you don't feel helpless anymore. All of a sudden I felt empowered that, I don't have to use that stupid picker-upper thing. they've got that little thing that you can, use that to pick things up where you grab things. But why not try to do as much as I can myself and, just lean over and pick it up. You just have to use your head more, which is all what Performing Edge Coaching is about, learn to use your head, right? So, that's great. Thank you so much, Daron, for all your suggestions. Yeah, and any other things, comments that you had or questions?
Just get yourself healthy so you can run again.
yeah, exactly. visualize that, all of that stuff, and a little bit at a time. And with your plantar fasciitis, you have that now?
Yes, it's pretty much gone. I have a few competitions coming up, so good timing.
I
pace myself with training and everything, and did some massage healing and chiropractic and did some education. Actually, has this book called Anatomy Train, which is quite fascinating. It talks about all these different lines that we have in our body and how these muscles work.
You're doing some anatomy training?
Well, that's the name of the book. It's called Anatomy Train.
Oh, okay.
And it's actually quite a fascinating book. It's by by Thomas Meyer, and it talks about all these different muscle lines, like frontal line, back line, spiral line, arm lines that we have in our body, and how all the muscles are connected, how they all work together in a relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
Read up on that and some ideas and some therapy from that to help with the process.
Yeah, I think that's good because anything you can learn about, you know, when you have an athlete that has an injury, you can, you know, work on their mental process and the physical because they all, as you say, work together in a relationship. So you can, just find out as much as you can about all of those things.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, and also, with plantar fasciitis, you can put your foot. I found that putting a pillow in the, I know it sounds funny, but at nighttime, putting a pillow between my feet so that your feet are sticking straight up, as opposed to the blankets pushing them down, helps so that you're sleeping with your foot in the proper position at nighttime. So the your foot is up, so the tendons are stretched out in your foot.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. They have those boots you can wear at nighttime, but it's really uncomfortable in bed kind of thing. But, those are really helpful, as well as you probably know about the ball and that kind of thing. There's TP Therapy. There's a website, tptherapy.com. And it's trigger point therapy. They have, if you go into any sports store, they have a ball that is really useful. It's just the right kind of ball that's, where you can roll on it on your feet. And there's different ball. You can do it with a tennis ball or other things. But they've developed this ball that is just, the right amount of tension. It's not too soft. It's not too hard. So it's like the equivalent of going to a massage therapist. And so you can use that for, rolling on your feet, especially you probably know the classic signs are when you first wake up in the morning, plantar fasciitis, you wake up and you can't, there's that first step that's the most painful kind of thing. And if you can roll the ball on your feet before you get up to loosen that area, then you won't be re-ripping the fascia there. So that's a good suggestion. So, yeah, I appreciate all of you being on this call and being your insights are so amazing and so supportive. And I'll, write up some notes about this, too, that I think it's something that we can all use for coaching. And the great thing about what we do as performing edge coaches is, that you don't have to be out there physically on a field. I mean, you can do that too, which is great with an athlete or, working somewhere, but you don't have to drive anywhere. You don't have to be anywhere. You can just use your, all your intuition and your knowledge and just be on the phone with your clients, just like I'm doing right now, even though I worked with a client yesterday and I didn't want to take up their time. Sometimes it's good to tell your story, but sometimes not. The client didn't even know that I'm sitting here, just recovering from surgery a few days ago and on crutches. I just went right into their what there's going on with them. And so it really, as you're doing your coaching, like as I was doing my coaching, it helps me to recover because I'm, focusing on someone else's problems instead of mine. And, it just gives you a lot more flexibility because you can be helping people around the world with your, with your coaching expertise. Just like we're all doing today here, kind of like creating a knowledge base together of recovery. So this week I'll be putting together a logbook for myself, for what I'm doing with my recovery. And, I'll send you that as well, the different, aspects that I'm putting into it that you could use for your clients too. And, it's really important to have some sort of, logbook or journal, I think, to write down what progress you're doing and what you're doing each day. Just so you have that as a, so you can see that, you're moving, in some way you're moving forward and you can, different questions to ask yourself. What did I do today to help move forward with my injury? what's good, you know, those classic questions I like to ask in any situation, rather than saying, oh, poor me, or why did this have to happen, or why does this always happen to me, ask yourself, okay, what's good about this? What can I learn from this? How can I keep moving forward? So in this situation, what's good about this is I'm still alive. I could have easily gotten run over by a car out there, just been lying there for hours in pain and not being able to get up with water going by. It's just amazing to think of what could have happened. So that's a good thing to ask yourself. What's good about this situation? And I got good help, good recovery quickly. I got into I looked up hip fracture. They say, you know, get the surgery as quickly as possible, and I got it within 3 hours of what happened, it happening. And so fortunately people were there to take care of me, and it all worked out. And what can I learn from this? I think one of the learning points is if sometimes in situations we don't have time to make a decision, you just got to make a split second decision about something, like in a car, you're driving on the road and you got to decide to go left or right, or on your bike. Sometimes you don't have time. In this situation, I did have just a little bit of time right before I got to that water. And I think the learning point would be for next time to, if you have a little bit of time to make a decision, take a moment to take a deep breath and say, okay, what are my options here? A, B, C, and what are the possible consequences? And then if you're not sure, then always go with the more conservative decision first. For me, that would have been, stopping and, not going across the water, thinking about it ahead of time rather than just going for it. So, and that's a learning point that I think, we can all learn from. Sometimes you do have that a little bit of more of a decision. And then there's that little voice inside that we need to listen to. Sometimes it's saying danger, is ahead. There's a warning sign, warning. And I wasn't listening to. I was listening to the bigger voice, that the macho voice that says, oh, just go, don't be a wimp, just go for it, go over the water. And I think that little voice inside that wants to take care of us is really an important voice to listen to too. So it's good to be able to, the more you can be, have attention to, that voice inside that wants to take care of you, that to evaluate the situation, to be conservative. That part that's just, because you realize you got to take care of yourself before you can take care of other people. It's okay to just step back and take a few moments to evaluate a situation before moving forward. So that was one of the learning points I've had here with this. Also with the PTSD, I think, just going over the situation in my mind, the crash, that's getting better. And what I'm able to do is a learning point there is to, when that happens, to be able to just switch gears. And, I just think when I start thinking about that, the crash, I think, okay, well, let's think about something positive. I think about I can't wait to go to the beach. I love water. Water is my friend, and in this case, water was was not my friend. But I want to, think about how grateful I am to be alive, and think about how grateful I am to be able to work with all of you here on the phone with our Performing Edge Coach training program, and how this can be a real learning teaching tool for all of us. So it's PTSD and other, going over bad things and mistakes in your mind, it can be a learning tool, a way to learn to switch gears then and switch into a positive gear of moving forward and taking good care of yourself. So, yeah. Anyone else have any, you guys want to just each give a final thought of, what you learned today or what your takeaway is from today? In terms of your own, how you'd coach people and what you learned. Susan, are you there? Sue, you can chime in if you like.
I learned a lot. I've studied this stuff quite a bit, but it's always good to hear what somebody else is going through. So every story that I hear adds to my responsibility to help other people. So I appreciate you sharing what happened.
Yeah, thanks. And I appreciate your feedback. Yeah, about realizing it's up to taking personal responsibility, that the doctor is not going to give you all the answers, and taking it one step at a time, kind of thing. Yeah, thanks.
I think what stuck out to me the most is just normalizing it for the athlete. So mm-hmm. like the feelings that they're getting, just, you know, any person going through that situation would react that way. So trying to normalize it to lessen the anxiety or depression that they may feel from it.
Yeah. Realize that it's something. Those are natural reactions, and it's okay to feel that way, and it will get better. I think that if you can emphasize that this is temporary, that when you look at your whole lifetime, many years, if you can look at this accident or this situation as just a small blip in the road, as opposed to a Mount Everest. Think of it as a learning tool, and that it's gonna pass, and every day gets better. I think that's a really good thing to think about. And just to look at what you can do, say what can I do as opposed to what I'm not able to do. Yeah, good. Thanks, Lauren. Daron, are you there? Yeah, what's your takeaway, or what did you learn today, or what would you like to say? Any final thoughts?
Well, that, you're human. I didn't know you were human, so that's good to know that you do break your bones.
Yeah. Yeah.
We all deal with different situations, and that, a lot of the time, you're just pretty much a great example of how to look at the positive end of things and how many possibilities and how many opportunities there are to do things while you're injured, and not to get too down on yourself, but to keep most of your attention on the positive aspect of what's available and what resources we do have out there. And, pretty much keep a good core of people around you, a good support system, and to use those people to, help you through this experience, and to not try to do it all by your own.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, I think that when there's catastrophes and, difficult situations, all throughout history, we've seen when that happens, it usually draws people together, New Orleans and Katrina and all that, all of a sudden people come together to help each other. And, it's wonderful when she put the word out there that I was, what happened to me, all of a sudden I'm able to connect with people that from a long time ago that are calling me and, wishing me well. And my birthday was on Sunday, when all this happened. They're saying, what a great birthday.
Great birthday present.
Yeah. I thought my birthday present is that, the surgery goes well. I'm hoping that I can just recover and, get good treatment. So, it's nice to be able to communicate, you never know what a great support system you have until you're injured and really something happens like this. So all of you are a great support system too. You're very positive, and I really appreciate all of you. So this is great. And so I encourage each of you too to if you have either your own cases or athlete clients or other clients that you have that you're working with, if you have a situation, feel free to bring that up in our next calls too, and we can go over those and use those as case studies as well. So this is great. I think another thing I'll just suggest too, with what I'm going to be doing and what you can have your athletes do, is just write about their experience, not only talk about it, but write about the experience. So, like with my eye surgery, before I actually wrote an article, you know, about it right afterward, I gave it to the surgeons, and they were, of course, very happy, and they put it in their newsletter, and I was writing for a running magazine, so because I'm a runner, and the eye surgery affected me as a runner, I wrote an article about, you know, surgery and how it can help support you as an athlete. And how it affects your, how your vision affects your running and your athlete performance, and so I'll be, you know, in the same way writing some things about this, and you could write, you know, have your athletes write about it, and even just for themselves as therapy, or also turn it into an article, a blog post, an ebook. And an audio show. I could have the hip fracture radio show. Something, you know, get hip, right? you know, just be able to express it in many ways, many formats. So, yeah, I guess I should do a video of me on crutches or something one of these days. So thank you so much for all your participation and all your ideas. And we'll talk. Our next one will be, let's see, in 2 weeks. October 13th, yeah. The next every second and fourth Thursday of the month, same time, same station. And so thanks so much for everyone for joining us. We'll talk to you the following Thursday then. So have a good week, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, be well.
Okay, thank you, John. All right, have a great week. Okay, bye.